Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
Welcome along. It's another football show and delighted to welcome back a semi-regular voice. Always great to have him on. Stephen Reid is standing by. Good evening.
Evening, Joe. How are you doing?
Very well. Strange times. How are you doing?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It is strange. You know, none of us have experienced anything quite like it. So it's just coming to terms with what's going on, and the priority for all of us at the minute is just making sure that the friends and family are safe and well, and doing all we can so that the numbers don't increase anymore. But yeah, it's such an unbelievable time at the minute.
Where are you living, Stephen?
I'm down in Epsom, Surrey, just by the racecourse. So, you know, we moved back down to London a few years ago when I was in a couple of the other coaching roles that I had. So we've been down here a while. Kids moved school, and you know, we up sticks and moved back down. So it's been fine. It's been fine. Obviously, my role with Scotland now means that I travel around quite a bit to various games across the country, up and down to Scotland. But obviously, for the foreseeable future, that's being put on major hold at the minute.
Yeah. And what's your situation family-wise? You know, everybody's concerned about their parents or, you know, different loved ones who may be vulnerable. What's your situation like?
Yeah, that's my only trip at the moment. My mum's in that vulnerable category at the moment. So my only trip is to bring essentials over to her and check that everything's fine there. My dad lives locally as well, but he's managing fine himself at the minute. The kids are obviously homeschooling at the minute, which has been quite interesting. My older one, Isla, she's cracking on herself a little bit with the schoolwork, but the little man needs a little bit of motivation, a little push in the morning. But that's, to be honest, that's all been fine. There's little bits and pieces now that we're trying to do together as a family, a little bit of exercise, which for me is a must daily at the minute, just to get, you know, that little bit of exercise and to clear the head a little bit. But apart from that, that's all we can do. You know, and the football at the moment is well on the back burner. And I think that's probably the bit at the minute that a lot of people that love their sport, you know, there's no live sport on at the minute. And everyone that is involved in sport, and especially for myself, involved with the Scotland national team, it's just that not knowing when you're going to be back. I think if there was a date that was actually put out when we was going to be back, then it brings a little bit of clarity to it. But understandably, it's not the case at the minute. So we just wait and see. We've obviously all been given the news today that the playoff games that were to go ahead in June, that's now been called off again. So it's just going to be just a waiting game, I guess, now. First and foremost, for the Premier League, for the leagues around the world, that's going to be the priority, to get that up and going before the international football can actually even think about getting started again.
I think that is the most challenging aspect of this whole situation to all of us. It's the not knowing when life might get back to normal. At least if we could count down the days, it would make things a bit more digestible for all of us. But just this vague outline of the future is that bit trickier to get your head around. And that applies to football, it applies to every aspect of life.
Yeah, just sometimes just seems to make things that bit easier when you get from a personal point of view, nothing to the scale of this and not comparing it at all. But when I had injuries and I knew I was going to be out for 10 or 11 months, you actually get that date when you're going to be back and you've got a target to aim for. You've got something to prepare for and think about. Our last games for Scotland were, you know, as the same with all the international teams, were in November. Mm. And we prepared for 3-4 months to get ready for that Israel playoff game. So it's incredible now that, you know, the next time we might get the boys together and get those squads and get those games played, it could be getting on for a year since our last game. So it's unbelievable to think about. But obviously the priority at the minute is to, you know, is to limit the amount of people that get infected with it and certainly limit the amount of lives that are going to be lost by it. So that's far more important than any sport, that's for sure.
Yeah. In the limited time you've had with the Scottish setup thus far, how has it gone?
Been good. It got off to a difficult start. We had four difficult games in particular, the two against Belgium and the two against Russia, where, you know, we was on the end of a few really, really heavy defeats, which was a tough time. Obviously, you're not getting the players as you would, obviously, at club level, so you're not getting a great deal of sessions with the players when you do get them. But I think over the last camp, over the last couple of camps, things have improved. We've managed to string three wins back-to-back together, and we kind of started to get a little bit of momentum and a good feel about the camp. But obviously now it's a case of almost feels like it's starting again. You prepare for so long to get ready for that Israel game in the playoffs. You do all of the work on the platforms that we have, such as Huddle, and you're doing your bits of scouting and opposition analyst sort of stuff that you're getting sent out to the boys. And actually, by the time you actually play those games, it's a case of reassessing who's fit again. You know, hopefully for us, we have a couple of key players fit for when those games do come. But the opposition as well, things might change in that department. So it's been a tough one to take from a football point of view, and getting back to obviously what we know and love. It is a tough one motivation-wise now to think that bit further ahead and to go again and maybe to pick up on the Israel game prep, the Norway and Serbia game prep, because you're obviously looking ahead, if you do beat Israel, the two potential teams that you're going to be playing in the final. So it's almost going to be a case of restarting a lot of that work again, you know, whenever the case may be. But at the same time as well, there's going to be a lot of the staff, I'm sure, within the SFA that have been helping us out with the work that are going to be put into furlough as well. So they're not going to be able to do some of the work that we've been doing. So it's just a case of the unknown a little bit at the minute, Joe.
Yes, I've heard the word furlough more times in the last 2 days than in the rest of my life combined.
I didn't know what that was, to be honest. Until can't stop saying it now. But yeah, it's mad times at the minute, and you kind of do what you can to help yourself and to help those around you.
Yeah, is the Israel game home or away, Stephen?
It's at home. It's at Hampden. It was obviously a sellout as well, which is another real shame. Obviously, the games that we've had at Hampden so far have not been sellouts. Probably half to two thirds full. So it was a game that everyone was getting excited about. There's a real buzz when I was going up to Scotland to watch the individuals and other players. You could sense the buzz of it. The sellout. It was going to be an incredible atmosphere. And then it's a case of trying to build that again and try and do it as best we can, to be honest. But yeah, we shall wait and see.
Because it's such a football country, and you think of the class of player that used to be there, and you know, Euro 96 and getting to the World Cup then in 98, 20 years of frustration. So I'm not shocked to hear that maybe the games weren't selling out, but even the whiff of getting back to a major tournament, and you could just imagine things explode there again.
Yeah, it was massive. There was, you know, a little bit of negativity around the camp for a long time. And understandably, the team had not qualified for a major tournament for so long. There was that negativity around the camp. But you could feel and you could sense that the buzz was returning. It was going to be one of the biggest games in recent history. It was going to be a sellout. I went to the Celtic Rangers Cup final a few months ago, and that was a sellout. And the difference between Hampden being half full and being a sellout, the atmosphere, it's a stadium where you're quite a distance away from the pitch, so for that to be a sellout was going to be an unbelievable atmosphere. But whenever it may be, whenever we do actually play this game, I'm pretty sure that it will be again, all being well.
So this is a combination of my memory and Wikipedia, so go easy on me here. Your coaching career, Reading from 2015 to 2017, you were in as a coach there, and then September 2017, you went in at Crystal Palace with Roy Hodgson to the following season. And then there was a brief period at West Brom. There was a caretaker manager and you helped out there for a season. And that brings us up to May of 2019, when Steve Clark, who you had worked with originally at Reading, gave you the call and said, look, I've got the gig.
Yeah.
Come on board and give me a hand. So at this stage, are you fully committed in your mind to the coaching life? You are on this ladder now, on this career path. Are you still almost to some extent dipping the toe, still seeing how you like it?
I think at this moment in time, I'm quite enjoying the balance of the international football. Went straight into it after I finished playing, had that 2 years at Reading, which had a lot of highs and lows. Obviously, Steve Clark got the sack pretty early on in my own coaching journey alongside him. After
that was the Stephen Reid kiss of death.
Final... And then Brian McDermott came in. He got the sack after this. Championship football managers seem to get a sack every 6 months. Mm. And then we played in arguably the biggest game in the world when you're playing in a championship playoff final at Wembley. But after that period, I thought I'd spend a little bit of time out the game and then add a year at Palace. And do you know what? After that year at Palace, which was fantastic working alongside Roy and Ray, I just made the decision to take a break from football. Just felt that, not just for the few years coaching, but probably over a 10-year period with three career-threatening surgeries and not enjoying the time with the family as much as I should have and missing out on times when I'm icing the knee every single day for 5 to 6 years. You know, the lads that were in the Ireland squad alongside me will probably have a little laugh and a joke about I used to have my kit bag and whatever we used to travel with, and I used to have the ice machine with me. You know, I used to travel the world and just felt like I wanted to just get that quality time back with the family and to enjoy that for a while, because for so long I couldn't go out for walks with the little ones. I couldn't chase the kids around in the garden because the knee would swell up and I'd be icing the knee. And my mind was constantly thinking about being ready for training, being ready for the game on the Saturday. So I just felt like I just wanted to take a break away from it and to try and just enjoy that family time and to enjoy some of the things that I've missed out on. But when you are having that break, you do miss the buzz. I had a little spell at AFC Wimbledon in between that as well, just for a month helping a friend out. Really enjoyed my little spell at West Brom. And at this moment in time, there's been other opportunities since I've been involved with Scotland because, you know, it is pretty much a part-time role. As much as I do it as full-time as I can, if an opportunity came about to get involved back at a club, I still can do. But at this moment in time, albeit this is going to be quite a long break from it, which is going to be difficult. I quite like the balance between that intensity when we are together, which is intense, 24/7 in camp, to then coming away from it and spending that quality time with the family.
What was it like that time you took off after the Crystal Palace period? Because effectively from your mid to late teens, you're almost institutionalised into the rhythms of football. And I remember, I think Keith Andrews was in here one day and we were chatting to you and you were just detailing the demands on your time as a coach at Premier League or Championship level. And it's relentless. Mm. It is get up, plan training, take training. After training, you're straight back into the complex and you're watching videos and then you're sent to a match to do a scouting report. And you're talking 12, 13-hour days. You're talking travel and the constant instability as well, as you mentioned, McDermott and Clark losing their jobs. So, you know, I must say I listened to you that day and didn't think a lot of that sounded all that appetizing. So that period away, almost having nothing for the first time in, I don't know, 15 years of your life, I accept there might have been a bit of boredom and a bit of missing the buzz, but was the time with the family and decompressing what you hoped it would be?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was the summer a couple of years ago when it was unbelievable. You know, the weather, it seemed like for 6 months, the weather was just incredible in London. So, you know, you have time to, you know, just to do stuff with the family and to play golf and to, you know, have a couple of days away and just completely relax from it all. Maybe it's a little bit my own personality, but when I'm in it, I'm in it. And I think it's been one of my biggest strengths and one of my biggest weaknesses at times, that inability to switch off from it. It helped me when I was getting back from injuries and wouldn't be beaten. And I'd be in the gym pulling one of the fitness coaches every single morning for 4 months to work specifically with me. But I took that into the coaching role. And in a way, when you're a coach, you take it even more personally, the defeats. Could you have done a little bit more in training? Could you have given a little bit more information to a player? Could you have done that little bit more work with a certain individual? I think it helps me, but I think it hinders me as well, because when I am back in it, it is full on. But just going back to your question, I enjoyed it for a long time. I enjoyed the break from it. Didn't watch a massive amount of football during that time, but after a few months, you know, and there's not your mates around all the time and your family and the kids are back in school and you've got plans, you miss it. You miss that Saturday. It was strange watching games again on a Saturday after I'd left Palace. So it was mixed emotions. Yeah. I definitely missed it, but I think this role at the minute came at the right time after a really good spell at West Brom as well. Another Championship playoff campaign.
Yeah, it does sound like a really nice balance, international management. So I guess in a sense you're trying to serve an apprenticeship and get a feel for how different coaches work and how you'd like to work. When do you think you're ready if a Championship club rang you and said, you know what, Stephen, we like the cut of your jib, we're going to give you a chance, do you want to be manager? Would you say yeah, would you say no, are you ready? How do you know when you're ready?
I think I'm ready, to be honest. I think if it happened now, I think the apprenticeship almost in the coaching world that I've had so far, I think I'm ready. And it has to be the right opportunity, though. I think at this moment in time, I'm loving the role with Scotland, loving working with Steve again in that professional capacity. Still learning, not saying that I've learned everything in the last few years, but still learning as we go along, working with a different quality of player, different type of football. We're coming up against, we came up against Belgium, the number one team in world football at the minute. So it's been such an interesting journey, but my mind for the last, since we've taken the role, has been to get this qualification. That is, I'd almost like to put everything on hold until after that, because I think we're more than capable of getting there, and to get there to a major tournament as a coach would be an unbelievable experience. But I'm also at the minute, Joe, I'm also doing I've spent the time quite wisely as well. I'm doing a counselling and psychology course with a PFA as well. So it's been going on for a few months now, and it's just something, an area that I've always felt has been massive for me personally through my playing career, and something that going forward as well is going to be hopefully a useful tool to help others as well, whether that be in football or not in football.
Wow, fascinating. I had no idea. So you obviously used those services as a player.
Yeah, I did. I did when I was particularly going through the injuries. But as a player, I always needed an extra bit of assistance from the mental side of playing and the psychology side. It was never came easy to me. It was always what we spoke about earlier, that my own worst enemy at times. So it never came easy just to go out and play. That performance was always something that I needed a little bit of help with at certain stages of my career. There were stages where the confidence was high and football came easy, but there was a lot of times, especially when I was back end of my career, when I was 50% fit at best, I needed the help of, I saw Steve Peters and Damien Hughes, a couple just that used to help me in my own playing career. And it's just something that I've always thought is, the difference in being a player that's confident and not confident is in wanting the ball and not wanting the ball is huge.
Yeah, and look, a human being, a confident human being versus someone with a crisis of confidence is just unrecognisable. I read The Chimp Paradox. It's good. Steve Peters seems like a shrewd operator.
Yeah.
So at your worst, at your low moments, the moments that might prompt you to say, do you know what, I could do with talking to someone over the next couple of weeks, in those moments, why you were just, was it lacking confidence or just struggling with a crowd, abuse, the pressure? What were kind of the triggers for you?
Yeah, it's more that. More particularly when I left Millwall and went to Blackburn, which was a huge, huge move for me at the time. And you're going from one dressing room into a dressing room that's got full of household names. And I for a year or so, really struggled to believe in myself, to be honest. It probably scored a goal for Blackburn against Wigan, which probably the best goal of my career. And it was almost like a light bulb moment for me where I felt like I belonged at that level. It's a similar situation, for me, probably never done myself justice in an Ireland shirt as well. Should have done more after kind of getting onto the scene at pretty early age and going to the World Cup. I never fulfilled that potential. But for me, it's almost like a case of, I'd be okay for a little spell and then I'd wait till I hit the floor and then seek a bit of help. Then I'd be back up there and then I'd be back. So I didn't really have that consistent it was a bit like a roller coaster for me. Mm. I actually sort of became stronger in a way at the back end of my career when my mind was so fixed on trying to be fit and get myself out there that whether I had a bad game or not a bad game, I was just happy to be back on the pitch playing another game because there's so many times in that during that period where I thought it was all over.
Yes, I guess it's something else to focus on. Just your health almost distracts you from the issues which might have bothered you 5 years previously.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely, yeah. I'm too busy getting my knee drained on a weekly basis to think about, you know, just mad stuff like that.
Yeah. Very interesting. Best of luck with that. And so you say, you know, potentially see how you like it, see how it goes. It could be another way you spend your time, be it with sports people or beyond, people with more serious problems, potentially. I mean, you're at the beginning of it.
It's definitely something that can also run it because being a coach in football is so unpredictable that you can be out of a job pretty much at any time. So that's something that's always interested me, got a bit of a passion for it. And it's something that can run alongside the football as well. Those moments when you're not in football, especially now, could be 6 months before we play again. Yeah. It's something to really think about getting up and running and set up as a service to, you know, to help others. And just because I find a lot of the time that there's no one really around for footballers. You either seem to be playing and everything's going well, or you're on the floor almost. Mm. There's not a lot in between where there's people there to just have a chat with about being a footballer or an elite sports person and just getting things off your chest about what you're going through. And there's not a great deal of sympathy in that world of football, especially because obviously it's a well-paid job, and sometimes people are a little bit embarrassed to actually say that they're struggling or they need a bit of help. And yeah, it's a course that I'm really enjoyed doing. I've done it through the PFA. It's one that runs, you know, once every couple of weeks, and yeah, some really interesting people on it. And yeah, we'll see how we get on with that, and it's something to maybe get my teeth into during this time that we're off.
Yeah, very good. Sounds great. Because I suspect, you know, someone like you with your injury profile, for instance, would know how lonely it is to be injured, and as a coach, what it might mean for the player, for someone in the coaching staff to check in, how are you, how are things? You're not forgotten. You're still a person to me, almost.
Yeah, and that's the thing in particular, when you've I've had the injuries that I've had, and you kind of know and you see how you like to be treated as an injured player, because some managers don't even want to see the injured players. They don't want them around the fit players for whatever reason that might be, but that hurts. When you're in it, that hurts. You do feel forgotten. You still want to be part of it, but if you're not made to feel that way, that can be not only difficult enough to get back, a bit like when Trapattoni, after I had my knee surgery, pretty much came out and said I might struggle to get back to playing top-level football. Mm. You know, how did that feel when I knew I had 10, 11, 12 months on the injury table coming up? So,
That was good of him with all his medical expertise to diagnose you from a couple of thousand miles away.
I think it was the old mix up in communication, that old one.
Is that right? Yeah, I was misquoted.
But on the other scale of that, you've got someone like Roy Hodgson that will poke his head in every morning and into the physio room and check how the injured players are doing.
Right.
And that really makes you feel a part of it and creates a good atmosphere in the club.
God, it's such a simple thing, isn't it? Sticking that around the door.
Roy
Hodgson, the more I hear about his management, and I, you know, everybody has their foibles, no one's perfect, but the more I hear about Roy, he got a lot of very, very simple things spot on, including something like that. That is not rocket science, and yet I'd be amazed, I'm sure, at how many managers wouldn't take the time.
Oh, and if you ask a football fan and you'd say, well, what I just said to you about Roy poking his head in and checking out the injured player, everyone would probably say, well, isn't that normal? Mm. And it's not the case at all. Like I said there, some managers don't like going in the physio room and don't like injured players around sound of match day. You know, wouldn't want injured players around the actual squad that are playing.
What is that? Is that some old school treat them like pariahs so they won't be faking injury legacy thing in football? What are like? Well, bizarre.
So. Maybe they think it'll rub off onto the fit players and they'll get injured too or something, and don't want any. Sometimes they see maybe injured players have been a negative around the squad. Where I think it can have the opposite effect. It can boost the injured players. think it's good to keep the squad involved. It's good to have those players going around the lads and giving them a pat on the back and wishing them well.
But that's the thing. If your best mate is injured and he's giving you a high five as you go out to play a match, I don't think that can be a bad thing.
No, not at all. And I think by sort of learning some of these skills and being through it, I've been there. I know what a player that's missed 2 years out of three has been through, and the feelings when you're not confident and you're in the tunnel at wherever it might be, Old Trafford and places like that. It's, I think, to have been and lived through those experiences, I think, can only help others, and hopefully I can add that as well to my coaching roles as well.
Yeah, for sure. Just a quick last one. I suspect this is the question every former teammate asks you when they bump into you. How is the knee?
Not bad. Okay. Not bad. I think, you know, still I've had the odd five aside. I go for the odd run. Luckily for me, I can still go out and have a run. I think it was more when I was playing and training, it was more the twisting and turning and the check-in and the intensity of elite training sessions and playing games. Still now, I still get swelling on it. If I have a run 2 days on the spin, on the third day, I still have knee swelling and whack an ice pack on it. But do you know what? Now it's not something that I'm thinking about. I have to be right for training tomorrow. Yeah. I've got to be right for Chelsea on Saturday, and I'm playing against Hazard or one of these players, and I'm half fit. I'm quite relaxed about it. At some stage, I'm no doubt I'll need another operation or two on the knee. I'm sure, but at this moment in time, it's pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's good. I mean, I get it, being able to go for a jog, even just psychologically, is a major thing, you know, I'm sure. God, I can't imagine being 50% fit, finding twisting and turning difficult, and sitting there on a Thursday alone with your thoughts, and, you know, Eden Hazard is waiting for you on Saturday in front of, like, the world, and match of the day, and all these lads going, geez, Reid had a stinker. I mean,
that must have been so frustrating. That's the thing about the Premier League football now, especially. You've got match of the day, Saturday, and they're pulling you apart, and Sunday there's programs, and Monday night football, they might go to town on you again. Then you've got your social media. There's an instant abuse if you've had a nightmare of a game, especially now. Luckily, I've probably finished just as now it seems like
it's gone up a notch.
Some of them are a little bit more toxic now. Especially if you have a bad game, the abuse seems to be rife at the minute. So I was probably fortunate that it was just escalating as I was finishing, because I probably would have got a lot more abuse.
Yeah, and like, what can you do? Tweet? Well, I'm banjaxed. What am I meant to do? You can't, you know, you can't make that excuse.
That's what I was going into a game thinking. That's the scary thing. I was sort of going into a game at towards the end thinking, just get through the game, you know, get through it, don't get injured. And that's not a place of where you want to be. You want to sort of actually be thinking about your performance, not that you want to actually get through a 90 minutes and not come off injured.
Yeah. It's very that is tough psychologically for a host of reasons. Well, if it's any consolation, you had many fine games. I never thought you were as banjaxed as you were, which is maybe a small success.
Thank you. Cheers, John.
Yes, the nicest thing I've ever said to you. So listen, thanks so much for checking in. Much appreciated. Obviously, we've got our qualifier here, which we're looking forward to, and we'll be maybe chatting to you around the Israel game, or hopefully beyond when you've qualified and rest up, take it easy, all that kind of stuff. So thanks a million, Stephen. Good to talk to you.
Stay safe. Cheers, Joe.
See you. Stephen Reid there.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
Now you're welcome back. So if you've just tuned in already, we've had Stephen Reid on the show. He was talking to us from his house in Epsom. Let's go from there to Poland, where Killian Sheridan is standing by. Hello, Killian. How you doing?
Hey, Danger.
How is life over there? I presume similar to everywhere else at the moment.
It's boring. Boring like everywhere else. We're obviously on lockdown as well, so it's been a little bit more relaxed, I think, here. I didn't have any of that panic buying or crazy queues or anything, so...
Right.
It's been pretty comfortable here so far.
And can you get out for a walk and a run and go and do a few bits and pieces, or are they asking you to stay put?
No, so we've actually got a pretty good setup. We've got we're going in and training in pairs of twos. So there'll be two players. We'll have one pitch, two players and one coach. And then you're kind of like at opposite ends of the pitch doing, might be running, some strength work, some days with the ball. So it's, to be fair, it feels like you're going in and training. So like I've still got that routine, getting up in the morning, going in, and then back home, like as probably like I normally would have been anyway. So there's hasn't routine wise hasn't been a massive change for me.
I presume games are on hold for the time being though.
Yeah. Like everywhere. And then I think every club is different. Some are giving players individual programs and you just have to go and do that somewhere yourself. The only thing they brought in here for being outsides, I think today anyone under the age of 18 has to have an adult with them. So I don't know if there was maybe groups of kids going around to parks and stuff like that. But other than that, it's pretty much everything shut down.
So I will almost certainly mispronounce the name of the club that you're with now in Poland. What's the name again?
What's your pronunciation?
Wilsa Pluck?
Yeah, to be fair, that's how I would have said it when I first came over. So it's Wisła Płock.
Oh, Jesus, we were miles off.
Yeah.
And so remind us, because you've had this incredibly varied career, obviously Republic of Ireland international along the way and over at Celtic for a time, and then you've got to travel the world effectively, I suppose, through your football. How long have you been in Poland? How's it been going?
So I came here, I joined here pretty much, I think like the 1st of February. But it was on the 1st of February, but it wasn't like a deadline day deal, because in Israel, their windows open until around, I think, the 8th or 9th of February, and Poland was open until the 28th of February, or 29th this year. So 1st of February I've been here, and when I had the chance to come back, like somewhere in Poland, I was pretty eager to get it done, because it's a league I know, a country I know, mentality of the people, everything like this. So it was probably because the last year, like 6 months in New Zealand, 6 months in Israel, kind of the thought of something that I knew that wasn't going to be like starting fresh again was pretty appealing.
Yes, I'm sure. Do you suffer with homesickness?
No, not like I miss friends, miss family, miss weddings, stuff like that. But I've never really, since I left and moved over to Celtic, I've never really had the like proper homesickness that a lot of lads get. So I suppose from that I've been quite lucky.
Yeah. We have an affinity here with Poland, I suspect, in many ways. The Polish people have come and integrated and are just part of everybody's daily lives now here in Ireland. You say you understand the mentality of the people and the mentality of the league. Tell us about life in Poland or playing in Poland.
It's playing here, like the training and stuff like that, it's hard training. It's a physical, like tough. You get, if a player gets kicked in training, they're not staying down and feeling sorry for themselves. They get kicked, they're straight back up. Like there's no, you see it a lot where guys can kind of get like bitchy with each other in training. If someone goes in hard, they're running after trying to get them back or something like that, or they'll take things like that personally. Whereas here they just kind of dust themselves down and get on with it, which is refreshing when you've been places that kind of have the complete opposite approach.
Mm. Where have you enjoyed your football the most? What leagues have been the most enjoyable to play in?
I'd have to say when I was in Cyprus, because it was successful in teams. So obviously with Apoel winning there, and then Champions League and Europa League. And then when I was at Ammonia, personally, like it was where I was most successful in terms of scoring goals and things. And then on top of that, you've got the lifestyle. So kind of everything kind of just gelled good there. Like there was the lifestyle, football was going good. And then, yeah, probably from just the fact that the both of them kind of worked together, I don't really think I've had that since.
Really, yeah. Well, I guess they go hand in hand. You're unlikely to enjoy even the nicest location unless your football's going well.
Yeah, yeah. And when you can be somewhere nice and if the football's not going good, a little thing that's putting you off about the place will become a big thing. And then if you are the other way around, if you're somewhere that's not particularly nice, football needs to be going amazingly. Because if you have one bad day in training, you're going back and you're thinking, what am I doing here? Like, I don't enjoy it. It's, and like, what one bad day in training can, again, you blow it up in your head that you're the worst player. Like, there's no point in being here and stuff like that. So it's, but you learn to deal with it. And I think that's probably something I've learned over the last year or two.
When you set on your journey, and you know, when you over in the Scottish League and Celtic as a young player, and here we are 14 years later, I guess no player sets out to join lots of different clubs and to travel to lots of different countries. Maybe you did. I could be totally wrong in that respect. Has it been an enjoyable career, or has part of you wished you had a stability and been somewhere for 6, 7, 8, 9 years?
No, I remember when I was like 15, 16, I always wanted to play in Bulgaria, Cyprus, Israel, New Zealand. I'm joking.
That was sarcasm.
It just happened. It was, yeah, the way things happened. When I was at Celtic and the chance to go to Bulgaria came up, it was kind of out of the blue, but I had a really good offer. The contract was really good, and it was kind of too good not to just take a chance on it.
Yeah.
And then I've always said that kind of opened the door for me to start going beyond. And I think once you start to go one or two places, your name goes around different countries in that area. So like agents will see you or clubs will see you and they'll think, oh, well, he can travel to different places. We can offer him here, we can offer him there. Maybe this club will suit him. Whereas maybe sometimes they look at players who are always in the UK and they think because they're pretty settled, it can be harder, I think, to convince them to move.
Yes.
But what you're saying about the like stability and that, it can be appealing sometimes. Probably more so when things aren't going good.
Yeah.
If the team's not doing good, if you're not on a good run, then you can start to think, oh, it could be nice just to go back where I know everything's not easy, but you've got more of your life, and you can go and play football and then come back and forget about it. Whereas when you're over in like maybe an obscure country, you're there for one reason.
And are you a lone ranger in all your travels, or is there a family to think about as well, and what's that all been like?
No, normally I'll have my girlfriend Jodie will be with me. But the last year or so, it's probably been like 50% on my own, 50% with her. She goes back to Scotland a lot, so it's like this isn't really too bad for me because I'm used to being on my own. So I'm not really, like I was saying, like my routine hasn't changed drastically that much. Just now I've kind of got a reason to not do anything.
Yes, you've been self-isolating for years. And what's the plan then going forward? How long is your career in Poland? Are there places you would still be open to going or you would like to go? How's the body holding up? How do you see the next couple of years going?
So I came here and I signed the end of this season and next season. And then beyond that, I've no idea. I've never really put a time scale on get to a certain age. I think I've always kind of as long as I'm fit enough and can keep playing and clubs will still be offering me deals, then I think I'll keep going. I think I'm lucky, like kind of my body, my physique, I'm not putting a lot of strain on joints or anything. I'm pretty skinny.
Yeah, so you're going to naturally don't put on weight, it seems.
Yeah, and because I started late in football, my body hasn't had the same stress other people would have had, like from being in academies from 12, 13. So I hope that can kind of prolong me a bit longer. So, but again, it's up to me to kind of look after my body as well.
Yeah. And when all this is done, does management beckon? Has that caught your eye? You've obviously seen lots of different cultures and ways of doing things and managerial approaches. Is that an area you'd like to dip your toe in, or do you give much thought to when this is all done?
I think everyone near the end of, like, I'd probably say as you're getting up to 30, you start thinking about stuff like that, like about afterwards. It just kind of hits you one day and you think, shit, I need to start like planning for something after this.
That's not a good day.
No. No, especially not on your birthday. But but the when for management, I've never really saw myself as kind of as a manager. I don't know, but it kind of, the more older I get and the more kind of I learn about football, the more I'm in it. You start to understand it more, and kind of like the tactical side and all the other stuff that when you're younger and completely, like, you're not really interested in it. Or when I was younger, I always would have said there's no chance I'll be a manager or be in football after.
Right.
But then kind of the more you're in it, the more you understand it. I think it can kind of, I'm not saying changes my mind, but it certainly gives you a different perspective on it.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, hopefully that's a couple of years away at least. And then I guess, I don't know, does the call of home beckon? Do you want to finish your days in Ireland?
The places I've been, there's no point in guessing where I'll finish. I've absolutely no idea. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's good to check in. I'm glad to see you still have a bit of routine and you're out and able to do a bit of training and keep some kind of normality, because who knows how long all this is going to last.
Yeah, I'm struggle to even fit this into it, actually.
Well, thanks for clearing the schedule. We appreciate it. Killian, thanks so much. Good to check in. Let's hopefully check in again when you're back playing football and scoring a few goals, hopefully.
Cheers, sir.
All right, thanks again. Killian Sheridan there.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.